From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up,
this is Soviet-style rules. Maybe in the Soviet Union, you do things like this, where only you make the rules, where you reject the ability for the person you're accusing to even be in the room, to question what's going on.
That was Republican Whip Steve Scalise on the House floor earlier today when the House voted 232 to 196 to approve the Democrats' impeachment procedures. Congressman Scalise joins us in just a moment. And we've discussed this week several times that this Sunday is the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. I'll be discussing the importance of praying for the persecuted with Pastor Andrew Brunson. And we'll talk about his new book, God's Hostage, A True Story of Persecution, Imprisonment, and Perseverance. Also, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin joins me to talk about an apparent double standard being applied to Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the member of the National Security Council who testified before Congress that President Trump's conversation with the Ukrainian president troubled him. The general has a perspective that, well, might surprise you. And a report out on math and reading scores reveals a decline for fourth and eighth grade students in the U.S. Now, the question is, should we really be surprised that education scores are dropping, given the amount of time and energy spent on radical sex and gender education that's taking place across the United States? Former Secretary of Education and my good friend Dr. Bill Bennett is here for what will be, I'm sure, an insightful conversation. We'll also talk about his new book, America, The Last Best Hope. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Let me remind you, we've got information there on the website, resources for this coming Sunday, the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. I do hope you'll be participating in it. Well, in our first segment today, I'd like to really hit on two related topics. First, the impeachment vote that took place in the House earlier today. Democrats rammed a package of ground rules for their impeachment inquiry of President Donald Trump through a sharply divided House this morning, the chamber's first formal vote in a fight that could stretch into the 2020 election year. The tally was, as I mentioned earlier, 232 to 196, with all Republicans who voted opposing the resolution and even two Democrats joining them. Second, I want to talk about the danger this political theater presents if America gets distracted from what is happening elsewhere, in particular the Middle East, where some experts say a new Arab Spring is budding. In Iraq, demonstrators are being shot dead in the streets. In Lebanon, protesters have paralyzed the country. And in Egypt, security forces have battled protesters of President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. But joining me now to talk about both of these issues is House Minority Whip Steve Scalise, who represents the 1st District of Louisiana. Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be back with you.
Great job on the House floor today. I want to bring the point out. You had a poster on the floor, and the point of your comments was that this is Soviet-style investigations that are taking place. These are the kind of things you would see in the Soviet Union, not in the United States, when it comes to how the Democrats are handling this investigation of the president.
It really is, Tony. And when you think about it, you know, there's been other impeachments. I mean, Andrew Johnson, nobody saw those, of course. But then the Clinton and the Nixon impeachments, they were televised live. Both sides had the same set of rules. It was fair rules. Republicans and Democrats could both call witnesses. The president was able to have legal counsel in the room to question. That's not the case today. And in fact, we've seen what's going on in Adam Schiff's little secret chamber where he's hiding, literally having hearings in secret, not letting other members of Congress in, not even yesterday or earlier this week. He wouldn't even let certain Republican questions be answered by the witness. That is Soviet-style justice. And then in the resolution today, it actually gives the chairman, a Democrat, the authority to deny witnesses the Republicans call. It actually allows the chairman not only to veto Republican witnesses, but it allows the chairman to kick the president's legal counsel out of the room if he so chooses. Is that fairness? Would they subject themselves to those kind of rules if they were falsely accused of a crime? And I think that's really where the American people look and say, hold on a second. I don't mind looking into something maybe, but to deny due process, to deny basic fairness, it begs the question, what are they hiding? And that really gets to the heart of what people like Jim Jordan and others in that room have been saying is what they're hearing in the room is not anything that's high crimes or misdemeanors. It's a lot of innuendo. And in many cases, by people who just don't like the president, which is why you have elections. But then they leak selective things out to the press to make it look so much worse. And then you don't know because the press isn't allowed in the room.
Well, could it be, Steve, that they're not really concerned about the procedures being fair because they know that the Senate is going to reject it? And so this is more about political theater. It's about being able to put their spin on it. It's about them to be able to work the narrative they want that is the most politically damaging, or at least they think it is, of the president.
It is. And, you know, that's been their intention from the beginning, from the day the president was sworn in. They said they wanted to impeach him before he was even president of the United States. So, you know, Tony, you've been pointing this out, but others can see that this isn't about violations of crimes, which, by the way, is what the founders warned against. I mean, Alexander Hamilton wrote very specifically in Federalist Paper number 65. He was concerned that the power of impeachment could one day be abused for political purposes as opposed to for criminal acts. And unfortunately, today on the House floor, Alexander Hamilton's concerns were sought and followed through by the Democrats, who did, in fact, just that, not because they listed any crimes. They haven't. It's the hope of crimes. That was what the Mueller investigation was about for almost 2 years. You saw all of that circus, and it yielded not one single charge. And instead of giving up, they just keep going and trying to find somebody that can make a claim. They investigate the claim. They see nothing there, and they go on to something else. We have an election next year, Tony. The people of this country are the ones who should decide who's the president, not Nancy Pelosi, not Adam Schiff in some secret room in the basement of the Capitol.
You know, I think this is less about this impeachment. It's less about the president and more about his conservative agenda that he's getting through. The left
Absolutely.
Has never experienced this, where you actually have a Republican president who is not in any form or fashion yielding to the pressure of the left, but moving forward, really changing the way American politics operates. He is in touch with the people, and he is doing exactly what he said he was going to do, and that is driving the left crazy.
It really is. And, you know, here you have a president who was elected saying he was going to do very specific things, and he's doing them. He's building thousands of miles of new wall to protect our border. He's put conservatives on not only the federal courts, but, of course, the two Supreme Court justices that he's picked. Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch have been just great interpreters of the Constitution. All of the things he's doing on foreign policy, that gets lost as his foreign policy. Just in the last week, the head of ISIS, al-Baghdadi, was taken out. And now the number two head of ISIS was taken out just a few days ago. These are major victories. He's taking on Russia. He's taking on China, taking on Iran, taking on North Korea. And, oh, by the way, the American embassy is now in Jerusalem. That's a remarkable foreign policy record that he'll get no credit from the mainstream media on. But you and I know how important that is around the world. And unfortunately, the liberals are threatened by this. This is not, you know, what their socialist agenda calls for. And so they not only want to, they can't beat him at the ballot box next year. I'm confident he'll win re-election. But you're seeing what they're doing now. They're trying to throw everything at him today because, as the lead author, by the way, the Democrat author of the articles of impeachment said, if we don't impeach him, he will get reelected. Tony, you don't impeach somebody just because you're afraid they're going to get reelected. Again, that was what our founders warned about. That's what the Democrats are doing today.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana, my guest, the Republican whip in the House. Steve, I would add one thing to the president's list of accomplishments. Well, two things, actually. Most pro-life president we've had in modern time. Advancing,
clearly,
not just
yeah.
talking about the life issue, but, and this is an issue that you are passionate about as well. He's advanced that. But also, when you talk about foreign policy, has done more to advance religious freedom than any other president in my lifetime. And that's big for the 280 million people around the globe that are being persecuted for their faith. Now, let me address an issue of, well, this is partisan. Republicans are going to protect the president because he is a Republican. Now, Steve, you and I have known each other for, I don't know, 25 years. We served in the Louisiana House together. I've got many, many friends in Congress, principled men and women, who I know that if this president whether he was Republican or Democrat, had done something to violate the Constitution or high crimes and misdemeanors, would not stand on a party line, but would pursue what was right and true. It's very telling to me that not a single Republican who voted in favor of impeachment or moving forward, I should say, with this process.
Right. It was significant. You know, and even Speaker Pelosi months ago said the only way you do something as divisive as impeachment is if it's bipartisan. And the only bipartisan vote today was against impeachment. Every single Republican voted against it. And we had a number of Democrats that voted against it because even they couldn't stand the Soviet-style process. So, you know, if you want to look at why they're still moving forward, I think we know how politically motivated it is. They're just trying to hurt the president's chances of getting reelected for all the reasons that we talked about. As you mentioned, most pro-life president we've ever had. The economy, we have the hottest economy in the world right now. People are seeing higher wages. This is what we should be celebrating and doing more of. Right. And instead, they're trying to take the president away from continuing this kind of successful conservative agenda. Right. And look, there are Republicans, we've all seen them, who have been critical of the president in different ways. So it's not like everybody is just falling in line because he's a Republican. You know, even some of those Republicans who have been critical of certain things the president's done said this isn't right. This is not due process, not fair, and they haven't laid out a case.
Steve, before we run out of time, I want to shift because I'm concerned with this political theater, that it's going to be a distraction, and it's dangerous if we miss what's happening internationally. Like this, what some are predicting may be a new Arab Spring. We see violence in Iraq. We see Lebanon, violence there, Egypt. Is there a concern that this political theater could be a distraction?
I hope it's not, but, you know, you've seen it. I mean, there is an uprising that is similar to the Arab Spring in 2011 in a number of countries. Lebanon's government is about to fall if it hasn't already. We're seeing in Iraq and other countries these young people that are rising up against corrupt governments, and that's what it's about. It's about corruption in government that people are just fed up with, and that's encouraging. You know, and at the same time, things like, for example, the Intelligence Committee, where a lot of these hearings should be going on what's happening around the world, including the things that led up to al-Baghdadi's capture. Adam Schiff hasn't had those kind of hearings because he's been so focused on impeachment in his committee, which, by the way, his committee is not supposed to be the lead committee on impeachment. It's supposed to be judiciary. But I think Pelosi doesn't have any confidence in Jerry Nadler, who runs the committee. That's her pick. But she doesn't have confidence in him, so she's shifted it all over to Schiff's committee on intelligence, and so they're not getting those intelligence briefings. Republican or Democrat members who should be involved in at least knowing some of the hot spots around the world and what we're doing about it.
Yeah, extremely important given what happened in the last Arab Spring, Syria, Libya, those countries. We need to keep our eye on that. Steve Scalise, thanks so much for joining us. Great to talk with you, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Always great to be with you, Tony. Thanks.
All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, we'll be talking about this coming Sunday, the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. Pastor Andrew Brunson joins me next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. A lot more still to come.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, this coming Sunday is the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. How important is prayer for the persecuted? Well, I think it's extremely important. And you don't have to take my word for it. This year at the Values Voter Summit, we honored Dr. Andrew Brunson with our Cost of Discipleship Award. And during the event, I interviewed him and I asked him about prayer. And this is just a short clip of what he had to say.
Are people still praying for me? I just had this deep desire and I needed that connection to the body to know that there were brothers and sisters praying for me.
That was his request, that people pray for him. Well, joining me now to talk about that experience as well as his new book, God's Hostage, a true story of persecution, imprisonment, and perseverance, is Pastor Andrew Brunson. Andrew, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony.
Good to talk with you, my brother. Let's just start with the issue of prayer. How important to you was prayer when you were confined by the Turkish government?
It really kept me going. And I think of, I had so many people praying for me. It was an unprecedented prayer movement. But I know that many who are suffering for Jesus in prison are often alone. They are often believers from who've come over from a different religion, often from a Muslim background, and many of them have been rejected by their families. And it's so important to be supporting them in prayer.
I mean, prayer is real. I mean, you talked about that, about how it sustained you, and you just wanted to know that people were praying for you, that you were not alone, you were not forgotten. And you're right, it did kind of spring forth a prayer movement as a result of the people rallying around you. And you talk a little bit about that in your book. Give our listeners a sense of your book and, you know, the story that it tells and the core of that story.
So there are two stories. There's a human side of it that was involved a lot of political intrigue, and I was held as a hostage and religious persecution. So I was held for 2 years in a Turkish prison. But the behind all of that political intrigue is the second story, the deeper story, which is God's story and how God was taking what was intended to harm me, by the Turkish government, what was intended to hurt me, he took it and turned it around and started this worldwide prayer movement that has just poured prayer into Turkey. So I became a magnet for prayer. And the other side of the other story was how I was really broken in prison by the conditions, but then God began to rebuild me in the second year. So it was brokenness, which often I didn't expect from the biographies I had read, you know, of strong mm-hmm. Christians who go through difficult times, and they're my heroes. But when I was in those circumstances, I found that I was weak and broken, and I turned to God in desperation, and he began to rebuild me.
Yeah, I remember you and I having that conversation, actually, on the plane flying back to the United States, that you said, you know, in all the biographies I read of Christians who were persecuted and you know, pressured for their faith, I never read this part. And you wanted to communicate that to other Christians, because there is that moment of discouragement and of desperation, of brokenness. And there's a sense that maybe something's wrong with you, because nobody, you never understood that other people went through that. But that's a natural part of this.
Yes, and when I thought, I don't measure up. I told my wife, Noreen, so many times, God chose the wrong man for this. And I just don't measure up to people who have gone through these things before. And over time, I came to think, well, I think God chose the right man because he wanted a weak man who could then be an encouragement to other people who are weak. And I'll say that many people who I have heard since getting out of prison, I thought it was unique to me, this weakness and brokenness. But many people who've been in prison for Jesus, obviously most of them are non-Westerners, they have said that they have an experience similar to mine, where there are rays of light, things that God does that encourages them. But for the most part, they experience sometimes the silence of God and that feeling of abandonment. He doesn't abandon, but we sometimes feel that way. And we need to learn to stand in the dark and lean into God even when we don't feel him.
It's kind of like almost a spiritual boot camp, you know, as you've described it, where in boot camp they take and they break you down and they build you back up. And everything that we rely upon, our own strength, our own ability, all of those things are stripped away. And we're absolutely, totally dependent upon God. And that's when he then begins to build back up.
Yes, and I found that God allows his children to be tested. And when we go into the valley of testing, we can feel very alone and despondent. And I found that as I focused on him and decided to lean into him, I made a decision with my will, not with my feelings, but with my will to say, whatever you do or don't do, God, I am going to follow you. And as I did that, he met me at that point of weakness.
God's Hostage, a true story of persecution, imprisonment, and perseverance. Andrew, where can folks get a copy of your book?
I don't know, Tony. I think wherever they sell them, Amazon, or I don't know.
folks, you can get it anywhere. It's a great book. Let me ask you this before we run out of time. You've been out kind of on a book tour, and you've been in a lot of secular settings about talking about your book. What's the response been like?
What I'm trying to do is simply carry the presence of Jesus. And I think especially from believers, what most touches them is to see that story of brokenness, because they're surprised by that. The story of brokenness and being rebuilt. And that's an encouragement, because a lot of people are struggling, and they often think they're the only ones struggling, but they're not.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's why we need to pray for the persecuted, especially this weekend as we recognize that day. And Andrew, I'm praying for you. All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Tony.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Andrew Brunson. Pick up a copy of his book. It'd be a great, actually, Christmas present. You want to get a few copies of it. God's Hostage, a true story of persecution, imprisonment, and perseverance. And actually, our account of what happened in Izmir, Turkey, when I was with him a year ago, is actually in the book. You can read about it. All right, when we come back, General Jerry Boykin joins me to talk about a double standard being applied to the lieutenant colonel from the National Security Council, the media treating him differently than they have other military people in the past. That's next.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's @TPerkins. All right, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who is serving with President Donald Trump's National Security Council, testified to impeachment investigators Tuesday that he twice raised concerns over the administration's push to have Ukraine investigate Democrats and Joe Biden. Now, the media has been quick to assail anyone who questioned Vindman's patriotism. It's like he's in this protective bubble from the media. In fact, saying that he's a, he's an American hero. He had a, he got a Purple Heart and so on and so forth. But the question is this a double standard? Joining me now to talk about this is Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, FRC's Executive Vice President. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. It's good to be with you.
Let's talk about this. Is there a double standard being applied here to Lieutenant Colonel Vindman when it comes to the press and his, testifying against President Trump?
There is absolutely a double standard. All I would do is invite people to think back to the New York Times when they had a big front page story called General Betray Us, when they were talking about General Petraeus, who had spent a lot more time in the military than this guy had. And then look what they did to Mike Flynn, Lieutenant General Mike Flynn. Look how they treated him. There was never any outrage on the left. And quite frankly, Tony, in my last 4 years in the military, I got beat up pretty bad by the left as well in the papers and the media and everything else. And there was there really was no outcry about, questioning my patriotism. So this is clearly a double standard. And, Tony, you know as well as I do, because you took an enlisted rank. Part of the oath that you take is to support or to obey the orders of the President of the United States and the officers appointed over you. And what this Lieutenant Colonel is doing, as far as I'm concerned, demonstrates that his political perspective outweighs his obligation to the U.S. Constitution. I don't think that it's unfair to criticize him.
Now, the military occupies a very important and distinct role in America. In fact, you and I have actually discussed this many times. Up until really in the last decade or so, the military was it was more like you were not to be seen especially when it came to even your uniform, your battle fatigues. You were not supposed to wear those in public.
Right.
There's been a big change in the military. The military in the United States is a supportive role. We are a civilian-led government, but this could actually provide somewhat of a crack in that, where we see the military challenging the authority of civilians.
Well, I do too, Tony. I think that's a very good analysis. And remember that our founding fathers, as one of the principles of our military, because there was such a battle over whether we would have a standing army or whether it would be all militia, they created a constitution that provided for civilian control of the military. That means that the military answers to the commander-in-chief and obeys the orders of the commander-in-chief. And, Tony, if this lieutenant colonel was that upset with the president of the United States, there's a way to get out of this, and that is you turn in your retirement. You say, I am retiring, and then after you have retired, you go public with your objections to what the president is doing. I've never seen this kind of thing happen before, and I think it is scandalous. And the dangers of what has happened, I think, are just exactly what you talked about.
Now, there is precedent for military officers who disagree with the direction and orders that they're given from their civilian authority figures. There are cases where they have put their stars and bars on the table and left.
That's exactly right. And that would have been the appropriate thing for this guy to do if he felt that strongly about what occurred. But for him to go and testify against the President of the United States and still be wearing the uniform, if he was retired, that's different. Look, I get involved in political stuff now, but I'm a retired officer. I'm not on active duty, and I never did such a thing when I was wearing the uniform, and I didn't know anybody that ever did, and I can't remember a time when this has ever happened before.
Now, is there not a chain of command where this lieutenant colonel could have brought his concerns up the chain of command?
He could have gone to his commander and laid out his concerns, and then if he was not satisfied with what his commander did, he could have gone to the inspector general and asked for an investigation. And I see no evidence that he did either of those.
Is it possible, and this is somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but is it possible the Democrats, sarcastic I should say, the Democrats are using him because they know that the public has such regard for the media, for the military, that they'll be less likely to challenge his testimony?
He's probably the only guy that doesn't accept that premise that you just stated there. That's exactly what's happening.
Well, it's something we're going to watch very, very closely. General, thanks so much for taking time out to join us. I know you're in an airport catching another flight off to speak at another event. So thanks so much for taking a few minutes to join me.
Thanks, Tony. It was a pleasure being on.
All right. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. 36 and a half years, the United States Army, now the Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. Let me tell you, we talked about this morning, he and I did, and he's pretty worked up about this because, as he said, this is unprecedented. And so just file that away, folks. I know a lot of individuals have been afraid to say anything because he is a member of the military, but there is a role the military plays. Is he crossing a line? All right, folks, don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right after these messages. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman. For decades, the nation's leading abortion supplier has claimed to be the champion of women's rights, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Planned Parenthood has repeatedly violated the law and violated women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the devastating effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities, Planned Parenthood is an organization that not only promotes a culture of death, but makes it a reality. In a new brochure from FRC, you will find evidence that will challenge your assumptions about Planned Parenthood and equip you with the information you need to be a true champion for women and the lives of unborn children. To order this brochure and to download your free digital copy, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, let me again remind you this coming Sunday, International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. We've got resources at the website, TonyPerkins.com. I do hope that you'll encourage your pastor, or if you are a pastor, that you will take a few moments out in your service this coming Sunday to pray for the persecuted. And there's a lot of resources in addition to what's on our website, but I know at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, we have a Prisoners of Conscience page where we have listed those who are being held that we've adopted. One that I've adopted is Leah Sherabu, who is the teenager that's being held by Boko Haram in Nigeria. And so I would encourage you to pray for her release. They've refused to release her because she would not renounce her faith in Jesus Christ. Again, just a teenage girl, been held now for 2 years by Boko Haram. All right. The 2019 National Assessment of Education Progress, also called the NAEP, or the Nation's Report Card, administered to more than 600,000 students, shows a decline among students, fourth and eighth graders, in math and reading scores. It's dropped since it's about every 2 years this has taken, the last 2017. Now, over the past decade, there's been no progress in either mathematics or reading performance. Question is, should we be surprised, given how much energy is being focused in our schools in the last decade on sex education? I mean, we've talked about on this program how radical those programs have begun and how it's just almost monolithic and singly focused these groups are that are pushing these. And I'm talking about the teachers' unions and so on and so forth. Well, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about a new book coming out from our good friend Dr. Bill Bennett, former Secretary of Education, one of the most influential and respected voices on culture, political, and educational issues. New book out, America, the Last Best Hope, and he joins us now. Dr. Bennett, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let me just say up front, we missed you at the Values Voter Summit this year. You were, as always, you're my favorite speaker. And in fact, every time you're there, it's like class is in session. And I learned something.
Yeah, well.
And I know you were sick and weren't able to be with us.
I wasn't sick. I was getting ready for surgery. And I have to tell you, because I cannot tell a lie to them. You guys, my goodness. The surgery was canceled, but then it was too late to call it off. We have a son getting married, and Mrs. Bennett, and you know Mrs. Bennett, she's a forceful personality. He said, if you go into the surgery and mess up the wedding, that's it. I said, you mean if I die, you'll be mad at me? She said, yes, I will. So anyway, the surgery's not a big deal. It's knee replacement. You know, it's not like I'm having a heart replacement. But anyway, we're all about the wedding right now. But thank you, Tony.
I completely understand. We want to keep everybody happy. Well, let's
especially one person. I don't know about your house. I
am in complete agreement. If Mama ain't happy, nobody's happy.
Nobody happy. You got it.
I'm going to get to the book. But I want to talk about this as the former Secretary of Education under Ronald Reagan. When you look at the test scores, especially math and reading, we're seeing a decline. We're not moving up. We're moving backwards. What's going on here?
I'm so glad you brought that up. This is the new release of the NAEP, what we call the NAEP, the National Assessment of Educational Progress. This is one thing the Department of Education does that's worthwhile. It's a national assessment of how much our students are learning. It's done across the nation, sample groups from each state. This was something I supported and actually strengthened when I was at the department as secretary. And you're exactly right. We're going backwards. 10 years, even 20 years. Our math scores are steady, a little off, and our reading scores are down. Now, I was, I was asked about impeachment this morning. I'll be asked about it again. I commented on that. I said, it's, very serious matter. The fires in California are serious. But for the long run, the failure of our students to be able to think, to read, to count, is potentially catastrophic if you think about what China's up to. And let me just tell you one, this tells you the world in which we live, Tony. I know you probably can't be shocked anymore by stuff, but there was one note in the report that said one bright light is that this gap between white students and black students has been closed somewhat in these results. You know how it was closed?
Yeah,
white
it's not...
students declined.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Oh my gosh.
And that's a reason to celebrate. Now, I will say that for the left, that's a reason to celebrate. But that was one of the concerning things in this report is that those students that could be helped the most through the uplifting power of education are actually the ones that are seeing the greatest declines.
That's correct. Yeah, the kids who need it the most, the kids for whom school is the most important. You know, the top 10% are still doing fine. You know, you grow up in a family that values education. You do homework with the kids. You encourage them to read. You stimulate them intellectually. You cut off the television. You give them a good pedigree. They're going to succeed. But kids who need it the most, where maybe the home life isn't so good, maybe there's not encouragement, where school can be the difference. H.G. Wells said, life is a race between education and catastrophe. Where school can be the difference between catastrophe and success, those schools are failing the most. And that's not America. That's not what we're supposed to be. And it just infuriates me. And the last thing I'll say, because I would like to take a couple minutes on my book, apart from the scores, Tony, in reading and math, and I'm so glad you brought this up, we do worse in American history than we do in even those two. It's our worst subject. Our students do not know who they are. Terms of being Americans.
I think that's intentional, quite frankly, because if you don't know where you've been and who you are, your history, then it's easy to redefine who you'll be in the future.
It remains entirely plastic, huh? You can form it any way you want. And of course, the history that is taught, and there is history taught, is left-wing, tendentious, politically correct. So it's a terrible situation. That's why I wrote the book.
Let's talk about the book because, you know, I wanted to address the reading first because if kids can't read, they can't buy your book.
Sure.
But, you know, we've got to get those kids to read so they can buy more of your books.
Sell the book.
That's right.
They can't read. I can't sell my book.
So I'm just trying to take care of you, Dr. Bennett. That's all I'm trying
to
do.
You're trying to give me an audience, right, Tony?
I am. Now, this is a kind of a rework, updated version of America, the Last Best Hope over a decade ago. In fact, I've got the original three-volume series. This is condensed down into a 900-page single edition with being updated to include the Obama years and the Trump years. So tell us a little bit about the book and why it's coming out now.
You know, I was struck by two things on this book tour, Tony. People say, gosh, it's a big book. It is a big book. It's 980 pages. But, you know, people are used to these sort of small comic book books that people write now. We get a lot of them on the left. We get some of them on the right. You know, why liberals are dumb, why conservatives are dumb. You know, why I hate liberals, why I hate conservatives. This is a real book. The real history of the United States. And the main reason I wrote it is because this country is the greatest political story ever told. We are uniquely blessed, and we have taken unique advantage of those blessings. And although it's the greatest political story ever told, our children have not been told that story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wrote it. And you just put it very well. They remain alien to themselves in a culture in which their past is denied. If they do not know, you know, what they came from, what their legacy is, what they've inherited, how will they support it, defend it? Well, of course, they're going to fall into temptations of socialism,
right,
government. If they don't know the history of this country and how we avoided communism and socialism.
Well, how we fought against it and how we
helped free people.
From the tyranny of communism and socialism.
Yep. And you know, an odd thing, an irony here is the left. The liberals, you know, back then, 20s, 30s, can take some credit because the early leaders of the labor movement did not, you know, the communists and socialists wanted an inroad. They didn't take it. The early leaders of the labor movement said, no, we don't want that. So what we did here is establish a labor movement where workers could negotiate their salaries and benefits and working conditions. And it was successful and has been successful. And because of that, because we did it right, we avoided the siren calls of communism, although this millennial generation is buying into it. And, you know, if this is not an emergency, an intellectual and moral emergency, political emergency, I don't know what is.
Well, I mean, yes, they're buying it when they have no form or no idea of what to compare
right.
it to. I mean, they're not aware of the millions that were killed by
right.
Lenin and Stalin and what happened under communism and socialism. So That is, I think, an indictment against our educational system in America today.
It is. And, you know, I've been pounding this podium for 50 years, 45 years now. But I'm going to keep pounding because it's so important. It's why we advocate school choice. It's why I've been supportive all my life of vouchers for educational freedom, homeschooling. The ability to educate your child the way you want. Latest thing. Like, these things are hard to believe. If you did them on Saturday Night Live, people would say the parody is too much. Seattle Public Schools now want to combine math with ethnic studies because there's a committee there that says math is inherently oppressive. I understand math.
Well,
math
it was hard. Oppressive to me when I was algebra was oppressive.
You remember that old argument about school prayer? Don't worry about prayer in schools. As long as there's math, kids will be praying, right?
Yeah, I was on my hands and knees, on my face praying.
Yeah. But I mean, but this means something else. It means to have to learn the, you know, what the white man's, you know, times table or coding, mathematical coding is somehow oppressive. Nonsense, quackery in the classroom. And this is a terrible thing. What do we think China's doing? Well, we're doing this. They're not fooling around with this stuff. They're not fooling around with ethnicity, ethnic studies, ethnic identity, and math. They're doing the right stuff, the straight stuff.
Right. Right. Well, we're preoccupied with sex education and gender identification. I mean,
oh goodness,
we're trying to teach kids, you know, that they can, you know, choose what bathroom they want to use on any particular day and punish them for using the wrong pronouns. I mean, we're spending so much energy creating new pronouns.
Isn't this hard to believe? The whole thing, the whole bathroom thing. My wife's from Charlotte. You know, this thing started up in Charlotte. What? Where did this come from? That you can choose your own gender, and you can do it at 6 or 7 or 8 years old. What madness is this?
Well, and that's a part of the underlying problem here. We're spending too much time and energy on this parallel universe of make-believe and not teaching the fundamentals that will help children. And the tragedy about this, Dr. Bennett, is not only it affects us as a nation, but these very children, these individuals whose future depends upon having the building blocks of an education are being denied that because our focus is elsewhere.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And we are hurting them. And again, another irony, liberals who say they have so much sympathy and empathy for the poor are putting them in schools that deserve them. And, you know, if you want kids to be lifted up, this is the great lever. This is the great way to do it. And we know how to do it, but we refuse to do it because we bow down before innovation and before political correctness instead of doing what we know should be done and will be successful.
Well, and this is where parents come in, grandparents come in, and teaching our history to our children and grandchildren in America. The last best hope is a great place to start with that. And it came out, I think, on the 22nd of this month. So it's
that's correct.
It's fresh out there in the bookstores, folks. It'd be a great Christmas present as well as a gift of any kind, but also just something to invest in your children and your grandchildren. I have to be very candid, Dr. Bennett. My favorite of all of your books still to date, although I like, I mean, this is a good book, is Tried by Fire, the story of Christianity's first 2,000 years. That, to me, was one of the best.
Thank you. You know, maybe you and I could team up. I'm still trying to sell that book as a TV series, Tony. I think the stories of those saints, what people endured for their faith, and how many of them did, how many stood so strong against the torture and suffering that was inflicted on them. Very dramatic, very powerful. And again, talk about something that people don't know. I'd love to bring that to television or the movies.
Anyway, I think it would be powerful because we're seeing these really almost unprecedented levels of persecution taking place today. And in fact, I was just talking with Andrew Brunson earlier today on the program. And it helps to know those stories. It gives us the encouragement to persevere in the face of opposition. Dr. Bennett, I hate to cut you off, Professor, but we're out of time. But we're going to visit again.
Where's my 50 minutes? I can't talk in less than 50 minutes.
Stand by. We're gonna get to that because I'm going to have you back on because I love the conversation.
Thanks, Jody.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bill Bennett. Pick up a copy of the book. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.